Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Anita Rao.
And I'm Sandra Davidson. We're so glad you guys are listening. And we're also super excited to be back in the studio because it's been ages.
It has really been ages since we've both been here.
Yes.
So, yeah, lots has happened since we last were together. The presidential debates this week. You watched. What are your thoughts?
Well, I did watch, and my thoughts were that it was exactly what most people would have expected it to be.
Yeah.
In some ways, it was better than what people expected it to be. And to be totally honest, I started putting Snapchat filters. I was watching it on a laptop, and I started putting Snapchat filters on each of the candidates halfway through. So I got kind of distracted. But that was also a way of mitigating some of the anxiety I had about the actual.
Yes.
Well, the stakes, as we would say.
Very true. Yeah, I was super jet lagged. And so I watched the first like 15 minutes live and then I fell asleep. But I had to cover it for my day job the next day. So I had to rewatch the whole thing. And yeah, pretty much as you would expect, I was a little bit frustrated with the moderator, sort of similar analysis to a lot of what we've heard this week.
Oh, there was a moderator?
Yeah, I know, right? Believe it or not. But anyways, yes, lots of election talk, lots of political talk,
yes.
And all of this has us thinking a lot about our democracy and what civic engagement looks like for people our age in this new millennia. And we have a special guest in studio tonight who can speak about that at length.
Yeah, and our guest tonight is Tina Haver-Curran, who is a Raleigh-based creative and activist. And she was raised, educated, and is currently rooted in North Carolina. By day, she is a marketing creative, and I don't want to say by night, but her other life is she spends time writing, doing social justice, advocacy, and activism, and somehow in the meantime has time to do long distance running and mountain climbing. So welcome to the show, Tina.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yes,
yeah, we're super, for being here.
We're super excited to have you. And if you're a listener from North Carolina, you very well may be familiar with some of Tina's work. So a couple of years ago, she and her husband started counter-protesting pro-choicers who gathered around an abortion clinic in Cary, North Carolina. And their efforts, which were called Saturday Chores, went viral, and she subsequently spent a year and a half of Saturdays showing up at this clinic, counter-protesting, and basically bringing awareness to the type of heckling and harassment women seeking reproductive health care face going into clinics like this one. Most recently, she's coordinated the Air Horn Orchestra, which is a weekly protest of House Bill 2, HB2, the bathroom bill, outside of the governor's mansion in downtown Raleigh.
So we'd love, before we get into the stories of all of that, to talk a bit about your roots and your backstory. I know you were born in Texas and then jumped to Florida and then end up in North Carolina. But tell us a bit about your early years and anything that you think was sort of a formative influence for the person and the ideas that you have today.
Yeah, I was a military baby. So, yeah, San Antonio, Texas is where I was born. Anybody who has Air Force associations would probably recognize, oh, that means San Antonio. Then we went to Florida, but I've been in Raleigh, North Carolina since I was 9 years old. I'm 29 now, so I definitely considered this my home. And I think since I've been old enough to form memories, they've been of the South. So I definitely consider Raleigh my home. I live about three blocks from the governor's mansion now, which makes doing things like the Air Horn Orchestra easier. But it's also a little bit difficult because I think being able to see the place where these things are originating on a day-to-day basis is also sometimes bad for my blood pressure. So I went to Broughton High School, and I went to Carolina and got an English degree. And just living in the South, I think watching the cities change, specifically downtown Raleigh, downtown Durham, and also spending some time living in Carrboro, I think have all contributed to my sense of definitely being interested in having a community and working to engage with that community and also working to make that community a better and more progressive place. I think so many people who are young and in the South care very deeply about their roots here, but often, I mean, the South has sort of a complicated history, and being from the South and feeling proud of being from the South sometimes, I think, comes with a little bit of baggage, and it comes with work to make sure that we all get together and present a new face of these new cities. So nothing in particular growing up other than just being in love with where I'm from and wanting to make it as reflective of my personal values as I can, I think.
And your path to activism was solidified in a Wake County jail cell. So can
That's
you tell
right.
us that story?
Yeah. So as I mentioned just a moment ago, I live really close by the legislature and the governor's mansion. I live in a neighborhood called Oakwood. So in my commute to and from work, I would pass by Moral Mondays, which was a big initiative that started happening, I think, in 2012. That was run by primarily the NAACP out on Halifax Mall in downtown Raleigh. And I got really inspired by joining in and just watching the messages of positivity and seeing the different types of people who were out there and just feeling like it was a small way that I could join together with like-minded people to express some of my frustration with the way the state was going at the time. So I think it was I had been out there maybe 5 or 6 times when I decided to get arrested. Part of the Moral Mondays whole thing was civil disobedience, and that was really the thing that the news media latched onto nationally. So, you know, I started to realize the power of peaceful protest in that way by following along. All of my family lives elsewhere, most of them still in Florida, some of them still in Texas. So I'm a lone wolf up here in North Carolina, and, you know, it's interesting to hear what they see happening. So a lot of my news and understanding of what's important here in North Carolina comes from the lens of, like, what's getting to Clearwater, Florida, you know, what's getting to Dallas, Texas. And at the time, during Moral Mondays, it was the arrests. That's what they heard about. So I vowed, I was engaged at the time, very soon to be married, and I vowed that as soon as my last name situation was ironed out, I would get arrested, because I didn't want to get arrested as a Haver, which is now my middle name, but was originally my maiden name, and then go through legal proceedings as a Curran. I just thought, like, I've never been in jail before. I don't want to make this any more complicated for myself than it needs to be. So the day after returning from my honeymoon, this was in June of, I suppose it would be 2012, June of 2012 at this point, I got arrested, and I was actually the first one to get arrested that evening, and I may have been the first one out. I was out of jail by like 10:05 p.m. And my husband picked me up with a takeout pizza, and we went home and we caught the premiere of a show called Under the Dome, which was on like WRAL at the time. We don't have cable, but that's like my vivid memory of like
that night,
going home and watching Under the Dome and like having this strange emotional attachment to it. So yeah, that's how I got started. And when I was in that jail cell, I was surrounded by some of the most interesting and inspirational and dedicated women that I had ever met. And I hadn't been too exposed to people like that in my life before. And there were several women, including a 94-year-old woman who had marched in the original civil rights protests. And they challenged me in that jail cell to just to speak up for my people and my people in that context were young people, millennials, teenagers, young people, people who are just getting into being able to vote and who are active on the internet and who maybe update or change or put a filter on their social media profile but don't show up. And I don't know. It was just so powerful because I didn't really have an answer and I couldn't really explain what had motivated me to be there other than like I had shown up a couple times. And so I made a promise in jail, which I suppose happens sometimes. I made a promise in
probably
jail.
Probably happens a lot.
I think it does. I made a promise in jail that the next time I saw something that really bugged me, that felt like an injustice, I was going to say something, and I was going to be present, and I was going to show up. So that's how it started.
So I'm curious about, so sort of imagining, you know, your husband picking you up, and you go home, and you have a pizza, and you watch a show.
Very romantic.
very romantic, yes. And very millennial. But also sort of contrasted with the experiences of some of the people you were witnessing in jail who don't have that privilege of going home and everything sort of returns to normal. How do you deal with that, navigate that as you continue to put yourself out there as an activist?
How do I personally?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tough. It is definitely, I would say, the most difficult part of what Grayson, my husband and I both do. I'm really, really lucky that I work my day job at a really amazing company called Myriad Media in downtown Raleigh they share my values and they advocate for those values. And I had a sit down conversation with the president before I decided to get arrested. And I said, you know, if I do this, what's that going to be like for me? Mm. And he said, it's going to be awesome for you. I support it 100%. Do it. And it's hard to say no at that point. That to me is just it's a bit of luck and it's a bit of privilege that I'm in that position, but it's also carefully choosing the place that I decide to work as well. You know, you don't have to, well, this is probably sounding a little privileged. A lot of people, if you're college educated like me, you're usually in a position to choose where you spend your time and who you affiliate with. I certainly was. I can speak for myself in that regard. So I feel very proud to be associated with them, and they've been supportive of me. And I know it hasn't always been easy. I certainly, I cause a little ruckus sometimes. So I'm just so grateful to be supported by a day job that continues to allow me to pay my mortgage and also supports me when they can and kind of quietly turns the other way when they need to. So
one of the things, you know, kind of to loop this back into broader conversations about modern political protesting, you know, ever since the most recent police shooting in Charlotte, you know, you're constantly seeing people say things about things on Facebook. And
they do say things
they
about
say
things.
A lot of things.
Yes, they do.
But one of the, I mean, I'm a white woman. I have mostly white friends on Facebook. And a lot of times you'll either hear something very bleak about what can we do, that, you know, I don't know what to do. But you'll also see like the kind of thought pieces that are basically like, here, white people, like we're going to do the work for you and tell you what how you might get involved with the Black Lives Matter protest, even though it's your work to figure that out.
Right.
And one of the bullet points that is in every one of those that I've read is put your bodies in the street with black bodies in the street, because of that tension between like who gets to go home comfortably, who can interface with the justice system or law enforcement more comfortably than us. And that is definitely, you know, it's funny because I hear from people our age sometimes, like, what good does it do to go out in the streets? Like, aren't there better ways for us to do that? But when you think about it more broadly speaking, that's a very important component of collaborative social justice work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think I feel very strongly that I've been granted a position in this life that allows me to take those sort of chances in a way that likely won't have as intense or long-term or lasting of an impact on me if I were to, you know, I'm making air quotes here, but like get in trouble. I'm probably going to recover from it pretty well. And that is a product of a lot of things. But I think in many parts, you know, being white and fairly middle class in America. So yeah, that's nothing I can fix or change, or there's nothing wrong with that. That's who I am. But I think with that comes a certain responsibility to use the privilege and the platform that is afforded to me simply by nature of being born this way, to make sure that I can help in whatever way I can pave the way for everyone to eventually share those same abilities, I think.
Well, tell us more about Saturday Chores. So kind of set the scene for how you fell into that. And I mean, it started one way and ended a different way.
It did. So it's called Saturday Chores because my husband and I were literally doing chores on a Saturday morning. We were headed to a Home Depot. I had received a Home Depot gift card for my birthday, which is how
that's
you know, like, yeah, that's how you know you are grown, is when you get really
it's
excited.
It's a great gift, though, for anyone listening.
Yeah. Grandma, thank you. I appreciated that Home Depot gift card. You probably did not appreciate what came from that Home Depot gift card, but thank you. So, yeah, we were headed to a suburb called Cary. There's a big shopping center called Crossroads in between downtown Raleigh where we live.
That's where I used to go see all my movies when
oh,
I
yeah.
was a child.
Yeah. It's like the hangout place for teenagers. You know, there's like a Plato's Closet or
yeah,
whatever.
There is.
So we were headed to Crossroads, and through that stretch of road, it's about a 10-minute drive, there's a health clinic, and it's a bit off the highway, but still on the pretty beaten path. And we were just driving by, and we saw a group of regular protesters outside of the health clinic, probably about 9:30 on a Saturday morning, and they were all holding signs that say babies are murdered here, and they were just standing out there, like, yelling at people. And I could feel the, you know how sometimes you just feel the tension between people, just like, it gets electric, uh-huh. you know?
Yeah,
Grayson, we didn't even have to say anything. It was like my hands on the steering wheel just kind of tightened against the leather, and I could see him like itch toward the window roll down button, and I'm like, don't you do it. Don't you yell at these people. Like, do not roll down that window. So we went by, and a few minutes had passed, and we didn't say anything, and then one of us just brought it up, and they're like, ah, man, like, this sucks. Did that make you angry? Yes. Did that make you as angry as I feel like it made you? Yes. So we talked about it, and Grayson actually was like, when we go past on the way home, we should just get a sign and like stand next to them and hold it up. And I'm like, okay. It's like, we should all have a sign that just points at them and says, this is a weird hobby. And I was like, that's awesome.
That's true.
It's totally true. So we totally did that. And
is that what the sign said?
That's what the sign said, yeah. It said weird hobby, and it had an arrow, and it was pointing to one of the protesters. And, I mean, it was just like, it was us on a lark. And I held the sign, and Grayson took a picture of it. And we shared it online because we're millennials and, like, that's what you do. And people just, like, people went nuts. People loved it in a way that I just thought, like, my friends would laugh mm-hmm. and be like, what are you doing? But it took off. So we kept doing it. We probably went out 5 or 6 Saturdays with different signs. One of our signs said, I like turtles. We had a Jesus sleigh sign, you know, just like goofy, irreverent, sort of wacky signs. One of my favorites was Grayson holding a sign, pointing at one of these protesters who was holding a Bible and babies are murdered here in opposite hands. And Grayson, who's this sort of tall, bearded, wily haired man, had a sign that said women's rights expert with an arrow pointing at the protester.
Can you give me a sense of how close you are to the clinic? So, like, are you seeing people walking out
oh,
of the clinic?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we are directly in front of the clinic. And that was one of the things that was really, really frustrating about being out there, is that they are so close and they yell at people. I mean, they scream at people. They don't scream obscenities, but they scream like, don't murder your baby, come talk to us, like, you're making a terrible choice, you'll regret this for the rest of your life, things that are really, really, awful. Really heavy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that being out there, the story went really, really viral. That was really surreal. We hadn't planned for or anticipated that in any way, but it has been seen at this point in every country around the world.
Wow.
Cuba was the most recent one.
And it inspired protests, like the same.
It did, yeah.
Branded the same, right? Like Saturday
exactly,
tours
the
across.
The same signs that Grace and I like made up in bed at night, like eating our pizza, talking about what's our protest sign going
to
be next
week.
It
seems to be a reoccurring thing.
It is. It is, you know, all great ideas are born over pizza. That's the takeaway here. Eat pizza.
Yeah, everybody
change.
Eat pizza.
Tell us about some of the conversations you had both with protesters and with people using the health clinic.
Yeah, okay. So with the protesters, that was weird. They are very intense. We're intense too, but I think we're intense in like sort of a, hey, like, let's like all chill out and we'll be in your face, but we'll only be in your face if you don't chill out kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
They're not like that. They have a very strongly held belief and they will certainly defend it. So it got tense at times. We had a lot of people who wanted to come out and participate and join us. So this movement, I guess you could say, went from just being me and Grayson just holding a sign and taking a picture and getting out of there to it being like them bussing in dozens of their people and then like dozens of our people coming in. And then
seems
suddenly,
like a very charged situation.
Suddenly it's 100 people with all of these signs and it's all happening outside of this health clinic and people are like straight up just trying to use this place like it's a doctor's office. It was weird and not good, and we did not feel good about that unintended consequence at all. So Grayson and I, you're going to laugh at this, Grayson and I actually went out for pizza with the organizers of the pro-life side.
Wow. Okay,
yeah.
Well, take
we
us
did.
To that moment.
So it's really funny. If you know much about Raleigh and now at this point Durham as well, Lily's Pizza is a really cool pizza establishment that's been around for many, many years. They chose that, which is funny because it's kind of like a punk rock, kind of gritty,
yes.
like very counterculture yes. institution. And we went to Lily's Pizza, and it was okay. It wasn't amazing, but it wasn't terrible. And
did they say, like, we want you guys to leave?
No.
Or, like, we'll leave if you leave?
No.
Or was it like a let's exchange ideas and discourse?
It was a let's get to know each other as human beings. We talked about our families, and we talked about our values, and we talked about pizza and beer, and they talked about their church. And, you know, like, we probably spent an hour and a half just getting to know each other. It was the two of us and the two leaders of the church on their side. And then I would say we were there about 3 hours, the back half of the hour and a half got a little more intense, and Grace and I actually did say, this is too much, why don't we just all stop? Like, we won't show up if you don't show up. We would love to not show up. Let's just, like, de-escalate the situation. And that's not something they were interested in, unfortunately. So from there, we started learning about legal code, and we learned that we could apply for a picket permit just the same way that they do. So we were actually able to obtain a permit for the same space, effectively moving them across the street on a biweekly basis. So we couldn't reach any sort of official like handshake agreement over the pizza meeting, but we did figure out how to use our legal rights to obtain a similar sort of outcome.
And how did this all end? Come to a close.
Well, unfortunately, they're definitely still out there, but Grayson and I went out for about a year and a half every Saturday morning, and we went through waves of requesting volunteers and backup and then not, and trying to de-escalate. And so finally, we were trying to figure out ways that we could solve the problem that we had unintentionally created of making this big hullabaloo outside of a place that we were trying to, like, take tension out of to begin with. So we did a Kickstarter, and we ended up raising about $6,000 in less than 12 hours to build 125 feet of privacy fencing in front of the clinic and landscaping as well. So instead of us being there and using our bodies and our signs, it's a sort of human shield to make a buffer, we installed a fence instead so that we didn't have to be there and we didn't have to antagonize the other side, which by the very end, when we had gotten so much news coverage and they were bussing people out, I mean, it became, it was never violent or anything, but it was a little antagonistic. So we were able to just put up a fence and put up some prickly trees and walk away.
So it seems like humor or some kind of sort of subtle nudge as a tactic is something that you do and you choose to do. I wonder how you respond to people who think that that may be some kind of shaming or, you know, you're not taking people seriously who feel these serious beliefs. Like, how do you sort of engage with a critique that the way in which you're approaching counter-protest may be... Yeah, I guess shaming might be the best word to...
You must have looked at the internet this week.
I look at the internet every week. Yes. It's my job.
So, yeah, this is... it's nothing new. I make this joke because this question has popped up in regards to the way we conduct our activism just recently, and it's been a bit of a social media stir. But, you know, in a lot of ways, I find that a success because it means that people are paying attention. And I think there are so many different ways to make change in our community, and some of them are simply being supportive and enthusiastic and positive. And I think there is a really important place for that. But I also think that another very important way that people create change is by being critical of things that they find unjust and feeling bold and brave enough to stand up and to say, hey, like, this isn't right, and we're going to say something about it. So it has never been an easy part of what I do, but I think it's important to consider all of the tools and resources that you have available, and also to consider what you particularly are good at. And unfortunately or fortunately, both my husband and I seem to be kind of good at ribbing people. And if I can use that to get somebody like the New York Times to come down to the Air Horn Orchestra and write about HB2 and write about Governor McCrory, or Rolling Stone to pick up the shame mural that we had commissioned for him during Hopscotch, which is an annual music festival. If that can be the lead in a Rolling Stone story, a political situation, and drawing attention to it, that to me is worth the criticism, because we need to be talking about these things. And simply standing idly by and saying, well, it's not so bad, doesn't always get noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a great preview for the second part of our conversation. So let's take a break, and we will come back and talk more with Tina Haver-Curran about her work as an activist in North Carolina.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to She and Her. Anita and I are in the studio tonight with Tina Haver-Curran, who is an activist in Raleigh. And we've been talking a lot about her journey to activism, her approach to activism. And now we want to take a turn and talk about the work that you're doing now. So you've spent 20-some Wednesdays, I believe.
25.
Blowing air horns outside of the governor's mansion in downtown Raleigh. So tell us about this air horn orchestra.
That is a ridiculous sentence. Nobody should ever say a sentence like that out loud again. But yeah, it's true. So again, Grayson, my husband, and I, after we did Saturday chores through that process, we learned so much more than I ever anticipated about local laws and ordinances, especially as they relate to assembly and noise, because you can definitely get some people to turn down their very loud microphones if they don't have a decibel meter on them, for example. So we learn the ins and outs of the sound ordinances in Raleigh specifically, and HB2 happened, and it was just so appalling on so many levels that, like I said, I live so nearby the governor's mansion that I think Grayson and I watched this happening, and we just said, like, what can we do? What should we do? And so why don't we blow some air horns at the governor, which is anybody's natural response to terror and crisis.
Definitely would have floated to the top of my mind.
I don't, this is just, we were just talking, and this over is pizza. The idea, probably over pizza. Like, let's be serious. It was probably over pizza. And this idea came up, so.
I could see your foot piece in protest, a love story.
It's the future novel. Yeah, stick around. So that came up, and Grayson shared it on Facebook and said, hey, to like 20 people want to get together and blow some air horns outside of the governor's mansion next Wednesday. And many more than 20 people, to our deep surprise, responded in the affirmative. So that was the first air horn orchestra. We showed up, and I would say there were probably 75 people on Jones Street, and we like just, it's exactly what it sounds like. We blew air horns at the governor's mansion, and we have since blown air horns at the governor's mansion for over 6 months consecutively. We've never missed a Wednesday, and it's Pat McCrory has since mentioned it in like multiple press conferences. There's this really incredible footage on WRAL where he was doing a press conference outside of the History Museum. It's the only time we've actually relocated the protest. We got some information that he would be there and the walls would be really thin. And we have an awesome relationship with the Raleigh Police Department. I mean, they're just, they've been nothing but wonderful to us and really, really accommodating and flexible. And we asked them if we could move the protest, and they issued us a permit on the spot to relocate. And I laugh thinking about it. You can watch on WRAL when Pat McCrory is sitting there answering a question, sort of flubbing his way through a question defending HB2. And in his mic that's on his shirt, all of a sudden it goes, and that's us. And we stayed there and we played those air horns for the remainder of his press conference. And he stumbles and he stutters and he says, I'm not standing out there blowing horns, and he motions toward the door. So it's just been, it's been funny and weird and surreal, but it's also been really oddly effective. The New York Times has covered it. It's reached at last check like over 5 million people in the state of North Carolina on broadcast television alone. So that's not counting any sort of internet shares at all, just like local television stations picking it up. And I think if you were to equate that to purchasing that airtime to, you know, have an anti-HB2 voice, it would be something around, you know, $50,000. So We've managed to, again, like, get people's attention in the strangest way and meet some really, really incredible people out there every Wednesday night, and we'll keep doing it. Hopefully we can stop doing it in November, but we'll be out there.
Well, we are so short on time, and I have so many questions. But what is the craziest thing that's happened to you on either of these protesting endeavors?
Probably lots of death threats. How crazy do you want to get? Pretty much anything you could imagine being said to me has been said to me. Having people threaten you and your life and the life of your family, like, not only at your home, but, like, at your place of work and to people who maybe don't even know you that well, that is probably
awful.
The worst. That's probably the worst. I don't know if that's the craziest.
Right.
Like, the internet, people can say things all day long. It's certainly the most unsettling. But it's been, like, I think the craziest thing is just that it works. Like, that people keep showing up to me is maybe more mind-boggling than anything else. And it's been so inspiring. And I absolutely would not be sitting here today if it weren't for everybody who continues to show up and to, like, encourage me to do the same dang thing, because I could easily sit at home and watch Netflix and do nothing, but I know that there are people who are going to show up and expect me to be there, so I better get my ass up and be there, you know?
Well, tell us a little bit, how do you find balance? Because, I mean, it seems like, you know, in all these narratives, it's been you and your husband there on the front line, so this is obviously your professional, political, personal realms are all sort of blended in one. How do you take care of yourself, and how do you sort of come up with sort of your internal motivation?
Yeah, as you can, I bet it won't be a crazy leap to infer, I'm a vegetarian. I've been a vegetarian for 20 years now, so I think eating well is a huge part of feeling good. I also exercise a ton. My husband and I both have started climbing mountains recently. We're training for our fifth marathon currently. That'll happen in November. So I have run like 30 miles this week. I'm gonna run 20 miles on Saturday, and it's just a thing that I do. So those are like really basic answers, but I fall on them every time. Like, eating well and exercising can't be understated. And then of course there are the things like having a wonderful support system and sleeping and then eating pizza. That's probably like the last secret. Exercise a lot and then eat as much pizza as you can.
Well, we only have a couple of minutes left, but I want to hear you tell us about Come Out and Show Them and Stunts before we conclude the show.
Absolutely.
So Tina's latest project.
So all of this, one thing we didn't talk about is the, I guess, more serious counterpoint to Air Horn Orchestra, which is something called North Carolina Needs You, which was an open letter to artists encouraging them to keep their shows in North Carolina rather than boycott after Bruce Springsteen canceled his show in the wake of HB2. And we ended up working with bands like Duran Duran and the Mumford & Sons and Animal Collective and many, many others to work with them to arrange ways to use their voice and their platform to keep their shows, to keep culture and arts coming to North Carolina, and also to donate a pretty significant amount of money to on-the-ground nonprofit organizations who are doing work to promote equality and combat HB2 in the state. So we ended up funneling more than $500,000 to places like Equality NC and Progress NC over the summer of 2016, and through that work, a band called the Dave Matthews Band really wanted to...
A band called.
A little guy named Dave really liked...
Dave had a band.
He liked what we were doing, and it was the first time in many years of doing these kind of things and funneling money and resources to other people that somebody stopped and said, look, I get that you want us to give money to these other places, and we will, but how can we give money to you? And at that time, we'd be like, well, like, I don't know. I just have a bank account. I don't know. We're not a nonprofit. We're not anything. We're like two regular people who are doing this in our underwear in our house. But eating pizza. Like, you can send me money if you want. I'm probably going to spend it on pizza. But So we made an agreement at that time that they would give us a grant to incorporate a nonprofit so that the next time something like this came up, we had the, you know, proper legal capacity to accept donations and grants and to continue doing our work. So from that, we formed a nonprofit. It's called Come Out and Show Them. And it's in the IRS in processing right now. We've been working on it for about 6 months, so it's a really mm-hmm. intense process, but it's been so much fun. We have an incredible board of directors from everywhere that like are just so much smarter than I am that I'm so excited to work with. And we're doing a benefit concert in downtown Raleigh with 32 North Carolina acts. We got King Mez coming back from California for the first time since working with Dr. Dre. American Aquarium, one of the co-founders of Merge Records is playing, Mac. It's just like Tiff Merritt. It's like going to be Sylvan Esso. That's a big one, I guess, people like. It's going to be really, really fun, and it's a ton of super, super talented, incredible North Carolina musicians who are donating their time, and they're like, musicians are not rich people, unfortunately. Yeah. So it's just so amazing to work with them and to work together to raise money for our nonprofit and a few others that are working for voter education and access before November.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, I'm going to ask a rapid fire. Your last rapid fire question. Who are your feminist icons?
Oh, my goodness. That's a tough one.
It can be, you know, like your mom or something.
Am I allowed to say Beyonce?
Yeah.
It's probably Beyonce.
Obviously, you haven't listened to this show enough. Okay.
Well, then I fit right in. That's like the easy knee-jerk reaction. But I look to Beyonce all the time, like when I'm feeling down or bummed out or like just not good about myself. And the way she carries herself and the messages that she sends always encourage me and inspire me and bring me up. So that's my answer right now.
Love it.
It's Beyonce.
I love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely.
This has been awesome.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
And do you want to tell people how they can find you and find your work?
Yeah. So you can find the benefit at comeoutandshowthem.com. And then Air Horn Orchestra is very millennial. It's just a hashtag, Air Horn Orchestra. That meets every Wednesday at 6:15 in front of the Governor's Mansion, and we'll be there. So come out and say hi.
Awesome. And you can find us at sheandherradio.com or Twitter and Instagram at sheandherradio. She and her.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.